Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de la Región de Murcia. Pruebas específicas de certificación. Inglés. Nivel C2. Convocatoria Ordinaria 2022. Comprensión de textos orales.
Task 1. Listen to radio host Celeste Headley giving tips about how to have a better conversation. Choose the sentence below, A to J, that best matches each extract, 1 to 8, according to what is said in the recording. There are two sentences that you do not need. The first item is an example. Write the corresponding letters, AJ, on the answer sheet, in spaces 1 to 8. You will hear the recording twice. Now you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds to read the task.
Example.
Don't multitask. And I don't mean just set down your cell phone or your tablet or your car keys or whatever's in your hand. I mean, be present. Be in that moment. Don't be thinking about your argument you have with your boss. Don't be thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. If you want to get out of the conversation, get out of the conversation. But don't be half in it and half out of it.
Extract number one.
If you wanted to state your opinion without any opportunity for response or argument or pushback or growth, write a blog. Now, there's a really good reason why I don't allow pundits on my show, because they're really boring. If they're a conservative, they're going to hate Obama and food stamps and abortion. If they're a liberal, they're going to hate big banks and oil corporations and Dick Cheney.
Extract number two.
Use open-ended questions. In this case, take a cue from journalists. Start your questions with who, what, where, when, why, or how. If you put in a complicated question, you're going to get a simple answer out. If I ask you, were you terrified? You're going to respond to the most powerful word in that sentence, which is terrified, and the answer is, yes, I was, or no, I wasn't. Were you angry? Yes, I was very angry. Let them describe it. They're the ones that know. Try asking them things like, what was that like? How did that feel? Because then they might have to stop for a moment and think about it. And you're going to get a much more interesting response.
Extract number 3.
Thoughts will come into your mind, and you need to let them go out of your mind. We've heard interviews often in which a guest is talking for several minutes and then the host comes back in and asks a question which seems like it comes out of nowhere or it's already been answered. That means the host probably stopped listening 2 minutes ago because he thought of this really clever question and he was just bound and determined to say that. And we do the exact same thing. We're sitting there having a conversation with someone and then we remember that time that we met Hugh Jackman in a coffee shop.
Extract number 4.
If you don't know, say that you don't know. Now, people on the radio, especially on NPR, are much more aware that they're going on the record. And so they're more careful about what they claim to be an expert in and what they claim to know for sure. Do that. Err on the side of caution. Talk should not be cheap.
Extract number 5.
If they're talking about having lost a family member, don't start talking about the time that you lost a family member. If they're talking about the trouble that they're having at work, don't tell them about how much you hate your job. It's not the same. It is never the same. All experiences are individual. And more importantly, it is not about you. You don't need to take that moment to prove how amazing you are or how much you've suffered. Somebody asked Stephen Hawking once what his IQ was, and he says, "I have no idea. People who brag about their IQs are losers."
Extract number 6.
Try not to repeat yourself. It's condescending and it's really boring. And we tend to do it a lot, especially in work conversations or in conversations with our kids. We have a point to make, so we just keep rephrasing it over and over. Don't do that.
Extract number 7.
Frankly, people don't care about the years, the names, the dates, all those details that you're struggling to come up with in your mind. They don't care. What they care about is you. They care about what you're like, what you have in common. So forget the details. Leave them out.
Extract number 8.
Listen. I cannot tell you how many really important people have said that listening is perhaps the number one most important skill that you could develop. Buddha said, and I'm paraphrasing, if your mouth is open, you're not learning. And Calvin Coolidge said, no man ever listened his way out of a job. Why do we not listen to each other? Number one, we'd rather talk. When I'm talking, I'm in control. I don't have to hear anything. I'm not...
Example.
Don't multitask. And I don't mean just set down your cell phone or your tablet or your car keys or whatever's in your hand. I mean, be present. Be in that moment. Don't be thinking about your argument you had with your boss. Don't be thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. If you want to get out of the conversation, get out of the conversation. But don't be half in it and half out of it.
Extract number 1.
If you wanted to state your opinion without any opportunity for response or argument or pushback or growth, write a blog. Now, there's a really good reason why I don't allow pundits on my show, because they're really boring. If they're a conservative, they're going to hate Obama and food stamps and abortion. If they're a liberal, they're going to hate big banks and oil corporations and Dick Cheney.
Extract number two.
Use open-ended questions. In this case, take a cue from journalists. Start your questions with who, what, where, when, why, or how. If you put in a complicated question, you're going to get a simple answer out. If I ask you, were you terrified? You're going to respond to the most powerful word in that sentence, which is terrified. And the answer is, yes, I was, or no, I wasn't. Were you angry? Yes, I was very angry. Let them describe it. They're the ones that know. Try asking them things like, what was that like? How did that feel? Because then they might have to stop for a moment and think about it. And you're going to get a much more interesting response.
Extract number three.
Thoughts will come into your mind, and you need to let them go out of your mind. We've heard interviews often in which a guest is talking for several minutes, and then the host comes back in and asks a question which seems like it comes out of nowhere, or it's already been answered. That means the host probably stopped listening 2 minutes ago because he thought of this really clever question, and he was just bound and determined to say that. And we do the exact same thing. We're sitting there having a conversation with someone, and then we remember that time that we met Hugh Jackman in a coffee shop.
Extract number four.
If you don't know, say that you don't know. Now, people on the radio, especially on NPR, are much more aware that they're going on the record. And so they're more careful about what they claim to be an expert in and what they claim to know for sure. Do that. Err on the side of caution. Talk should not be cheap.
Extract number five.
If they're talking about having lost a family member, don't start talking about the time that you lost a family member. If they're talking about the trouble that they're having at work, don't tell them about how much you hate your job. It's not the same. It is never the same. All experiences are individual. And more importantly, it is not about you. You don't need to take that moment to prove how amazing you are or how much you've suffered. Somebody asked Stephen Hawking once what his IQ was, and he says, I have no idea. People who brag about their IQs are losers.
Extract number six.
Try not to repeat yourself. It's condescending and it's really boring. And we tend to do it a lot, especially in work conversations or in conversations with our kids. We have a point to make, so we just keep rephrasing it over and over. Don't do that.
Extract number seven.
Frankly, people don't care about the years, the names, the dates, all those details that you're struggling to come up with in your mind. They don't care. What they care about is you. They care about what you're like, what you have in common. So forget the details. Leave them out.
Extract number eight.
Listen. I cannot tell you how many really important people have said that listening is perhaps the number one most important skill that you could develop. Buddha said, and I'm paraphrasing, if your mouth is open, you're not learning. And Calvin Coolidge said, no man ever listened his way out of a job. Why do we not listen to each other? Number one, we'd rather talk. When I'm talking, I'm in control. I don't have to hear anything. I'm not...
Task 2. Listen to an interview with Sonia Sotomayor, who wrote a children's book. Decide which 8 of the statements below, A to T, are true, according to what is said in the recording. The first sentence is an example. Write the corresponding letters, A to T, on the answer sheet, in spaces 9 to 16. You will hear the recording twice. Now you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds to read the task.
The Spanish newspaper, which my father brought home every day from as he rode the train home. But for me, that's what I want kids to do, to want to be more than they can imagine.
Who inspired you to be more than you could imagine? Because here you are in a position, highest courts in the land, inspiring the youth. But someone had to inspire you.
My mother. Born in greater poverty than I ever existed for me and my brother. In a situation in which her mother died when she was 9 and her father abandoned her, and being raised by her older brother and older sister. It was a tough, tough life that she had. And she did what millions of other young Americans have done. She joined the Army.
Wow.
During World War II, and she came over to the States, and she ultimately met my father, and my brother and I followed. But my mom, in her 40s, went to college and got her registered nursing license.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Wow.
So it's really hard with a mother like that not to think education's valuable.
I can only imagine. And in the book, it really speaks to it because you are talking to kids from a very personal place. The book is called Just Ask. And what I really love about the book is you have these stories of a group of kids who go into a garden, and really it's a tale about children who may be facing difficulties in their lives. You know, you have a little child who has ADHD, you have another child who has Tourette's, you have Sonia who has diabetes. I wonder where that came from. And it's a story about the kids having whatever they have to deal with, But the one obstacle you don't want them to face is people judging them because of what they have to deal with.
Judging them because of their difference.
Right. How did people judge you because of your differences? Like, was there ever something that happened to you where diabetes, you know, it seems like everyone just accepts that.
No, but they don't. And the Just Ask title was born over 30 years ago. When I was 7 and a half, I was diagnosed with diabetes, and I started to give myself injections of insulin every day. And as was common back then, gratefully less common today, I was embarrassed by my condition.
Right.
I thought it showed weakness. I thought my friends would make fun of it. And so I hid it. And as I grew older and I took multiple shots a day, because at first it was only one and I did that at home, over time it grew to 2 shots and still at home, morning and afternoon. But as I grew older, multiple shots a day were more common and more frequently before I ate anything. I was in a restaurant in New York in my early 30s, and I would order my meal and then go to the bathroom to give myself my shot. This day, I didn't go into the stall. I stayed in the public areas because it was a 2-stall bathroom, mm-hmm. and there was no one there. As I was finishing, a woman walked in. She saw me doing what I was doing and finishing up, putting my injection away, and I walked out. I ate dinner, finished, walked by the woman, and I overheard her say to her companion, "She's a drug addict." And I stopped. And the first emotion I felt was shame. I was mortified. And then I thought about it for a second, and I turned around and marched back to the woman and said, "I'm not a drug addict. I'm a diabetic. And that shot you saw me take is the medicine that saves my life every day, insulin." And if you don't understand when someone's doing something different than you expect, just ask. Don't presume the worst in people. And wow. I walked away. And wow. But that didn't make me. The Spanish newspaper, which right. my father brought home every day from as he rode the train home. But for me, that's what I want kids to do, to want to be more than they can imagine.
Who inspired you to be more than you could imagine? Because here you are in a position, highest courts in the land, inspiring the youth. But someone had to inspire you.
My mother. Born in greater poverty than I ever existed for me and my brother. In a situation in which her mother died when she was 9 and her father abandoned her, and being raised by her older brother and older sister. It was a tough, tough life that she had. And she did what millions of other young Americans have done. She joined the Army.
Wow.
During World War II, and she came over to the States, and she ultimately met my father, and my brother and I followed. But my mom in her 40s went back, not went back, went to college and got her registered nursing license.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Wow.
So, you know, it's really hard with a mother like that not to think education's valuable.
I can only imagine. And in the book, it really speaks to it because you are talking to kids from a very personal place. The book is called Just Ask. And what I really love about the book is you have these stories of a group of kids who go into a garden, and really it's a tale about children who may be facing difficulties in their lives. You know, you have a little child who has ADHD, you have another child who has Tourette's, you have Sonia who has diabetes. I wonder where that came from. And it's a story about the kids having whatever they have to deal with, but the one obstacle you don't want them to face is people judging them because of what they have to deal with.
Judging them because of their difference.
Right. How did people judge you because of your differences? Like, was there ever something that happened to you where diabetes, you know, it seems like everyone just accepts that.
No, but they don't. And the Just Ask title was born over 30 years ago. When I was 7 and a half, I was diagnosed with diabetes, and I started to give myself injections of insulin every day. And as was common back then, gratefully less common today, I was embarrassed by my condition.
Right.
I thought it showed weakness. I thought my friends would make fun of it. And so I hid it. And as I grew older and I took multiple shots a day, because at first it was only one and I did that at home, over time it grew to 2 shots and still at home, morning and afternoon. But as I grew older, multiple shots a day were more common and more frequently before I ate anything. I was in a restaurant in New York in my early 30s, and I would order my meal and then go to the bathroom to give myself my shot. This day, I didn't go into the stall. I stayed in the public areas because it was a 2-stall bathroom, mm-hmm. and there was no one there. As I was finishing, a woman walked in. She saw me doing what I was doing and finishing up, putting my injection away, and I walked out. I ate dinner, finished, walked by the woman, and I overheard her say to her companion, "She's a drug addict." And I stopped. And the first emotion I felt was shame. I was mortified. And then I thought about it for a second, and I turned around and marched back to the woman and said, "I'm not a drug addict. I'm a diabetic. And that shot you saw me take is the medicine that saves my life every day, insulin." And if you don't understand when someone's doing something different than you expect, just ask. Don't presume the worst in people. And I walked away.
Task 3. Listen to a TV show where they interview Alan Duffy, a space expert. For items 17 to 26, complete the gaps with one suitable word from the recording. The first item is an example. Write your final answers on the answer sheet, in spaces 17 to 26. You will hear the recording twice. Now you have 2 minutes and 30 seconds to read the task.
Well, this next story sounds like a ripoff of a Hollywood science fiction movie.
In just a few days, NASA will launch a satellite directly towards an asteroid in the hope of preventing what's being described as an apocalypse. Let's bring in Professor Alan Duffy to talk to us more about this. Professor, is Bruce Willis working for NASA now? This sounds like the plot to Armageddon.
It is very much the idea of Armageddon, just a little bit smaller budget than that film, and certainly no Bruce Willis. This is a pretty incredible mission, however, known as the Double Asteroid Redirect Test, or the DART mission. NASA is launching a spacecraft to strike a near-Earth asteroid known as Didymos. And the intention there, or at least rather the pair of asteroids, because it's being orbited by a smaller asteroid. And I say small, but it's 160 meters across. This is a class of asteroid known as a city killer. If it was to hit a city, it would be equivalent to a nuclear strike. It would absolutely wipe it out. So these are the kinds of asteroids that we want to try to intercept. And through hitting with a spacecraft at high speeds, ever so slightly change or nudge its trajectory and direction, and hopefully cause it to sail by safely past the Earth. Now, this asteroid is absolutely not on the way. This is instead the perfect test to show that we can do this, because, well, when it is Armageddon, you don't want that to be the first time you've tried to nudge an asteroid out of the way.
Okay, so to be clear, this little sucker, this big asteroid, is not... we're not in danger from this, but we're doing it as a test run in case it was coming our way, right?
That's absolutely right. This is the test for doomsday. So we want to make sure that we can move these asteroids out of the way. And this is why we're testing on one that's completely safe, because if the mission goes wrong, that's going to be awkward, but at least it's not going to be Armageddon. So
yeah,
this is why
ask,
NASA is going to this extraordinary effort. Now, all of this is the most extraordinary level of precision. The spacecraft is going to fly after a 10-month journey, will strike this orbiting little moonlet at 23,000 kilometers per hour. It's equivalent to a few thousand kilograms of TNT when it strikes in terms of energy. And all of that is going to change this little moonlet's or asteroid's velocity by less than a snail's speed in terms of motion.
So
we can see that difference from mission. Earth, and we think that's going to make a difference to its trajectory.
Yeah, it's a suicide mission for that spacecraft, sort of, if I can put it that way.
No, this thing is going to get absolutely obliterated when it hits. Yeah, it's going to be gone. But it will have served its purpose.
And just completely unrelated, but is that a koala in a spacesuit over your right shoulder?
It is. This is an official Australian Space Agency
fabulous
koala naut.
I love it.
The cousin of this little bear behind me went up to the space station and now is pride of place. Not behind me. This is the replica. The real one is sitting at Australian Space Agency headquarters in Adelaide.
It is very cute. Professor Alan Duffy, thanks for your time.
Well, this next story sounds like a rip-off of a Hollywood science fiction movie.
In just a few days, NASA will launch a satellite directly towards an asteroid in the hope of preventing what's being described as an apocalypse. Let's bring in Professor Alan Duffy to talk to us more about this. Professor, is Bruce Willis working for NASA now? This sounds like the plot to Armageddon.
It is very much the idea of Armageddon, just a little bit smaller budget than that film, and certainly no Bruce Willis. This is a pretty incredible mission, however, known as the Double Asteroid Redirect Test, or the DART mission. NASA is launching a spacecraft to strike a near-Earth asteroid known as Didymos. And the intention there, or at least rather the pair of asteroids, because it's being orbited by a smaller asteroid. And I say small, but it's 160 meters across. This is a class of asteroid known as a city killer. If it was to hit a city, it would be equivalent to a nuclear strike. It would absolutely wipe it out. So these are the kinds of asteroids that we want to try to intercept. And through hitting with a spacecraft at high speeds, ever so slightly change or nudge its trajectory and direction, and hopefully cause it to sail by safely past the Earth. Mm. Now, this asteroid is absolutely not on the way. This is instead the perfect test show that we can do this because, well, when it is Armageddon, you don't want that to be the first time you've tried to nudge an asteroid out of the way.
Okay, so to be clear, this little sucker, this big asteroid, is not... we're not in danger from this, but we're doing it as a test run in case it was coming our way, right?
That's absolutely right. This is the test for doomsday. So we want to make sure that we can move these asteroids out of the way, and this is why we're testing on one that's completely safe, because if the mission goes wrong, that's going to be awkward, but at least it's not going to be Armageddon. So
yeah,
this is why NASA is going to this extraordinary effort. Now, all of this is the most extraordinary level of precision. The spacecraft is going to fly after a 10-month journey, will strike this orbiting little moonlet at 23,000 kilometers per hour. It's equivalent to a few thousand kilograms of TNT when it strikes in terms of energy. And all of that is going to change this little moonlet's or asteroid's velocity by less than a snail's speed in terms of motion.
So it's
we can see that difference from mission. Earth, and we think that's going to make a difference to its trajectory.
Yeah, it's a suicide mission for that spacecraft, sort of, if I can put it that way.
Oh, yeah, no, this thing is going to get absolutely obliterated when it hits. Yeah, it's going to be gone. But it will have served its purpose.
And just completely unrelated, but is that a koala in a spacesuit over your right shoulder?
It is. This is an official Australian Space Agency koala naut. The cousin of this little bear behind me went up to the space station and now is pride of place. Not behind me. This is the replica. The real one is sitting at Australian Space Agency headquarters in Adelaide.
It is very cute. Professor Alan Duffy, thanks for your time.
Fin de la prueba.